Awesome. Lauren Bonner, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Ryan.
I appreciate you taking time out of your day and doing it and putting on this so stilted display. I fucking hate it. It was so fine. We're just like chatting and then I was like, all right, press record. Fuck this. All right, okay.
Mic's on.
It's all out the window.
Hello and welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How did you used to start Big Natural Talent?
Well, it's the same thing. Every single time we start the podcast, we don't have a plan.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times I feel like you hear a pattern. You feel like there's like a, welcome to the show. We're here doing this. These are the things we say. But every time we started, it would be kind of from scratch. It'd be like, but that's what makes it fun. Keep people on their toes.
Yeah. Well, you are listening to Dead Ramones. It feels so counterintuitive to say because, like, you're on the app, you know what you're listening to.
Yeah.
But for people who may not have heard of you before, who aren't in the comedy scene,
not many people haven't heard of me in the world. Yeah,
you're pretty famous,
pretty prolific, especially in the I don't want to use the wrong genre word. What? Metal?
The emo violence?
Emo violence?
Emo violence?
Violence, that's great. That's the word I would have used to describe my experience listening to this album. So it's good to know that you've also adopted that.
Yeah.
No, I'm a comedian.
You're a stand-up comedian.
And
TV writer.
Actor.
You went to Argentina. I just remember this. You went to Argentina for what, 3 months?
I do forget sometimes. And I did go to Argentina for 3 months, recorded a TV show.
Can you talk about that yet?
I think I can. I don't know. I should like read my contract.
Was it Netflix or what was it?
It was for Disney, and then the strike happened and everything got delayed.
Yeah.
And then Disney is selling it now.
Goddamn.
And I think it will get bought, and that's probably the stuff I can't talk about. I think it's going to be fine.
Can you tell us the title of it?
It's called While You Were Breeding.
While You Were Breeding?
Yes. And it's not pornographic, but no, it's about like a woman who is in her early 30s. I'm not that woman. I'm a side character.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's like all her friends have started having kids and getting married and whatnot, she's just not done living. So it's kind of her adventuring and traveling and meeting people and romance and stuff. It's based on a memoir by Kristen Newman, who's a comedy writer.
Okay. Nice. Awesome. Yeah. Sick. How was Argentina?
It was cool. It was like one of those places that was never on my travel list. Like never really thought about Argentina. Like maybe that makes me sound ignorant. And like, it's funny the amount of people that have been like, oh my God, I've always wanted to go to Patagonia and stuff. Yeah, and I was like, oh, I like have a Patagonia jumper. I didn't like realize it was a thing. But no, Argentina was very cool and crazy. Look, I'm a vegetarian.
Yeah, right.
Argentina is famous for its beef.
Yeah, steaks.
And I also like, it's so funny how much I complain about things when I was given this amazing opportunity and had everything in the world and had per diems and I could buy whatever food I want. And it was like, you know, just real dream stuff.
Yeah.
But then I come back and I'm like, the vegetables were not very fresh. They didn't season things much. You couldn't get anything spicy. There's like, I think in Australia, we're so spoiled.
Yeah.
We have the best produce in the world. We have amazing.
And you can also just get any cuisine you want. You can get Argentinian food if you want.
If I wanted like a steak with no seasoning on it, I could get it here. No offense. And there's no Asian food or anything. And we have such good Asian food. And that's such a staple for me.
Yeah. That's actually really interesting to go to a city. And like, it's like, well, we've got Argentinian food. And that's it. Like,
there's quite a bit of sushi.
Okay.
But a lot of the sushi was really weird. Yeah. Like a lot of it had cream cheese in it.
Yeah, cool.
But anyway, like it was pretty good.
Did you meet any suspicious German people while in Argentina?
It was so funny. I met like quite a lot of people who were like had Jewish background.
Oh, yeah.
But then I wonder how many like Germans were there and then they were like, we're German. Oh, but no, we're like Jewish.
Yeah.
But
way back. Yeah.
And then now it's just kind of become like. So I know I didn't meet anyone who was suspiciously German, but I feel like they've just really dropped that.
Yeah, fair.
Because everyone went there. Like even didn't like Mengele go to Argentina.
I'm pretty sure. And there's like the theories that the conspiracy theories that Hitler didn't kill himself. He's actually went into hiding in Argentina.
Wow, he's a tango teacher. Or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a wild place, but it's a cool city.
Nice. Yeah, Buenos Aires. Yeah, cool. Awesome. And you have a TV or a YouTube series?
I do.
I call it a TV. It's 2024. That's a TV show.
My TV isn't even connected to TV. So
yeah, exactly.
You know,
a
TikTok's a TV show. If I just put in a HDMI cable, right?
Yeah.
That's a series, baby.
That's a next level addiction. Google Chromecasting your TikTok feed to your widescreen TV.
I haven't done that, but I think I want to.
Yeah.
No, I do.
Going
do
Under?
Check it out. It's called Going Under.
Yeah.
We were in the ABC Fresh Blood.
Yeah.
It's like a funding thing with Screen Oz.
Yeah.
Where they fund you to make a little web series. Yeah. So 3 5-minute episodes I made with Danielle Walker.
Who is, I've said this before and she's not here, so I don't feel awkward saying it. Maybe the funniest person in Australia.
She's really funny.
No one makes me laugh like Danielle. Like,
she's
so good.
She sees the world in a really interesting way.
She won't even tell a joke. She'll just say, like, she'll explain what she's about to talk about.
Yeah. And that's funny.
It kills me. And then she actually gets the fucking joke and it's just like another level. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's created by her and then we wrote it together.
Yeah.
But it's about a family and you can check it out. It's 3 5-minute episodes.
Just watch it. Yeah. Yeah. Kevin Jin was on as well and he had this similar thing with Westerners he talked about. It's like, just watch it. It's 15 minutes.
Just watch
it. You don't have to like it. Just give us the views.
Yeah,
like,
you've got 15 minutes. This album was 15 minutes long.
I know, right? Yeah.
And
much prefer to.
I think my 15 minutes felt shorter than that 15 minutes.
I know what you mean. I know what you're talking about. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
And it's okay. And I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. It was actually very short. That was interesting. That was good.
Yeah, it was good.
That was
through squinted eyes. It was fun.
That was my favorite part of it.
The length. And the only other thing I kind of wanted to bring up before we like jump into like the meat of this episode is the fact that you've got a festival show.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Imagine Having Anything at All. I saw the first draft and I can't stress enough to anyone listening that you have to go see this show.
Oh, me too, actually, guys. If you could...
Please buy tickets.
Financially,
yeah.
Emotionally, mentally,
yeah.
You guys kind of do have to see this show. Otherwise, it's all going to be over for me.
But I saw. I'm assuming what was half of what the finished product is going to be.
More or less. I mean, I feel like... No, it's changed a bit. Yeah. And I've added a bunch of stuff. It's a bit longer, obviously. Mm. And hopefully... I'm in the process of like learning it. Now,
yeah, yeah.
So because the show, so normally I'm a stand up and I do stand up, and the show's still very funny and it has a lot of
jokes in it. What I found interesting about it, I don't want to give too much away, obviously, but it's like a dramatized
one-woman
play.
It's basically. Like a monologue more. It's a character.
Yeah.
So that's what's different about
but
it.
But you've incorporated your actual stand up into this character, which I don't know, like, it feels wrong to say that I've never seen anything like that before, but I don't think I have.
Wow.
Like the weird melding of like, you know, you write stand up from your lived experience.
Yeah.
But then like taking that and it's just like, it's like a weird confluence of things and it works really well. I loved it.
Cool.
And that's the point I was trying to make, like very early version of it. And I was like, I don't want to be hyperbolic, but I just thought it was fucking great.
Thank you.
I don't want to say I was blown away or anything.
At this stage, I really need to hear this. Thank you so much.
Like,
thank you. Thank you.
Especially after, because I saw it at Fringe Festival and I was like, you know, I did three shows of my own in 1 week. And then like you go and see all your friends' shows. I'm just like, I'm fucking done with stand-up comedy.
We talked about this. Yeah. Because I was
just
like,
a breath of fresh air.
I love my friends. I love comedy.
Yeah.
But to sit down and watch another hour of comedy when that's what you do all the time and like you think it's just can be too much.
Yeah.
So, and then that was when I sat down to write a show and I said, okay, if we've got to do another show. And then it was like, I can't do an hour of
they
do stand up every night of the freaking week.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what if there was another lady?
Yeah.
And she did something else.
I can't be myself anymore.
I cannot be in my own skin for this hour show.
Yeah. Dude, I didn't think about this, but like I am planning on doing something like not dissimilar next year, but like
just
like an elevated version of
I think
whatever. Yeah.
I feel like we're going to see more of it because like...
Yeah.
Just it seems like an evolution or like, I mean, cause, but I don't know, I'll definitely never leave stand up or anything.
Yeah.
And like, you can always come back,
but
it is just a good challenge. Like, and that's the thing, just to actually knock yourself out of it.
Yeah.
Cause you can get into such a pattern with stand up that like, if you just change it or like be someone else or add a weird element, or
there's so many things that you can do with,
yeah,
it's just you on stage with a microphone. So
yeah.
Like, and it's also like, no one is, no one's coming to you on the street and being like, oh, I need you to get up and do stand-up. So it's like, it's all self-started. So it's yeah. like, why not just do exactly what yeah. you want?
You're not on a plane and they're like, is there a stand-up comedian?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We need someone to do tight five.
You can literally do whatever you want. That's
you can
like kind
do
of
anything
of
you want. Yeah, yeah. And hopefully it's entertaining enough and hopefully... But also if it's not, it's not. Like, it's very DIY the way I'm doing the show. Like, yeah. I'm indie. I'm self-producing it. I don't have a director. I don't have... And then it's been a bit like, maybe I should have got a director. But then it was like, I can't pay someone. And also, like, it's just an experiment, kind of. And so I'm like, let's just... And it's kind of proof to myself. It's like, hey, can I do this? Can I, like, just do something completely myself? And... Yeah. The dates are set and so
yeah, you've got a deadline.
We'll see. We'll
That's
see.
Part of what I like about the festival kind of structure. Like, you know, you don't necessarily have that for stand-ups in America, like, but in Britain and Australia, it's really like centered around this deadline. It's like, oh, I need a show.
It is. It's like...
And I kind of like that. It's like, it's, just do it. Just do the work.
It's the only way you can kind of get things done. Like that's, I mean, it's, what would you call it? Like a, it's from like a story or like a principle or... I don't, but like a Ulysses contract, do you know what that is?
No, yeah. I don't, but I like that. I like the
so
name.
it's the thing of, I'm going to butcher this for anyone who actually knows about history or anything, but Ulysses, the story is he was like on a boat and they have to drive in the boat. Ulysses was like driving his boat. I assume it was like a speedboat, like a Miami Vice kind of thing. Yeah. So Ulysses is driving this boat and they have to go past an island full of sirens.
Oh, yep.
Who,
yep.
like, if you drive past them in
you
your
drive,
boat.
Yeah. A cat calling you.
Yeah, they're like, hey. And all this, and you always like die. You steer the ship into the rock and you want to fuck them and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So he makes his men tie him to the mast. Yep. So that's where that tying yourself to the mast kind of comes from.
Right, he's tied
to the mast, so he physically cannot drive into the sirens. And
but
so
the
he's
other fellas
forced.
Are all what, like eunuchs, so they don't.
I think they like pull wax into their ears or something. But he has to stay alert to do something. But he's tied to the mast, and that's what signing up to a comedy festival is
it
like
is.
Doing.
Yeah, it absolutely,
you're
is.
Tied to the mast. You have to do it.
Yeah,
you
can't
have
get
to
distracted by
go forward.
these hot babes.
Yeah, I know. Like you sign up to the festival, and then all of a sudden there's all these chicks everywhere, and they're like,
oh, you're doing a festival.
Cool. Oh, come fuck me. And you're like, no, I have to go to the open mic.
I like art.
Yes, I'm an artist. So, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. Do you feel like you built an audience through... you had a podcast with Concetta Caristo called Big Natural Talents. Do you feel like you have an audience that buys tickets to your shows?
Somewhat.
Does that give you the freedom, you think, to try new shit? Or you just... don't really think
I don't it. Yeah I don't know I still I don't have a huge audience I mean I have a decent like it always still surprises me when like people come to a show and they're like, oh, I listen to your podcast.
Yeah,
and it's like, that's so nice. I think podcast listeners, especially you guys listening, and you know how it is, like, because if you listen to a podcast, you're listening to a whole hour of someone and you're getting to know them, and you have much more of an attachment than if you just see them do a funny TikTok or something.
Yeah
I mean, if you follow them on TikTok and then you watch all their TikToks, then you have an attachment to it. But a podcast is a good audience member to have, because they know your vibe.
Yeah.
So I have a bit of an audience, but still not huge. So listener, please do still come.
Yeah, guys. are you doing Brisbane?
I'm not, actually. Okay. It was a little bit like, I don't know if I can do it, sort this out, da da da. So I didn't end up applying for Brisbane, but I have done Brisbane in the past.
Yeah.
But Brisbane is a bit more of a exclusive festival. But again, I have done it, so maybe I could have done it. But I would like to do the show in Brisbane.
Yeah.
But
you can do it at Good Chat. That's like a nice size.
That's what I thought, size. The only thing is just working out, because it's like a bit more theatery. So like just that sort of thing, like technically. But I do love Good Chat. Good Chat Comedy in Brisbane. Shout out.
Good Chat Comedy Club in Brisbane.
go check it out, guys. But no, I do want to go up soon. But
yeah, sick.
Not any time in the summer at all do I want to be in Brisbane. So
so you're just doing Melbourne and Sydney?
Melbourne and Sydney.
Hear that, guys? Lauren Bonner, Imagine Having Anything at All, Melbourne and Sydney. Go see it.
Please come. April in Melbourne and May in Sydney.
Yeah.
It'll be fun. It'll be cool.
It will be fun. I've seen it.
Yeah.
I've seen, the point I was trying to make before is, like, I've seen a very early version and I was still like, this is sick.
You've seen the worst version of it.
Yeah, I've seen the worst version of it and it was really good.
It can only get better.
Yeah.
It's quite affordable, I believe. It's like under $30.
I'll pay you to come.
And it's also like, that's the thing about comedy shows. I think it's under an hour. It's like a tight. Yeah. How good is that? I saw June 2 the other night.
Oh, God.
You want to talk about a commitment from an audience? Are you kidding? Yeah. An hour show? What a treat.
Yeah,
a
treat.
An hour, like 50 minutes, if that, you know, in out, get a drink. Like, you're done.
Go home. You'll be in bed by 9. It'll be fine.
That's enough.
Yeah. The only other thing I was asked, because like obviously people, even when you were doing the trials, like people were like, oh, it's like Fleabag. And it's like, obviously it's like
Fleabag. I know, it's so hard because you don't want to be like, it's like Fleabag. But it's a woman talking.
It's a woman talking. It's a woman being angry about something.
It's a woman daring to express herself. Yeah.
I got a bit of like Daniel Kitson out of it though as well.
Oh, that's I'm not super duper familiar with his work aside from people saying that he's awesome.
But like he's very emotive. he's not like, I guess like Acaster is similar as well. Like just not dedicated to pure, like the jokes are great. The jokes are there, but he's not like, this is everything. This is all of me.
Yeah.
Like there's all this other sort of emotional stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
That he expresses really well. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Cause I think, stand up, it can be really engaging. And some of my favorite stand up is so pure, dry stand up.
Yeah. Just jokes.
And I can be so dry that, it's a funny thing I've been encountering recently where I realized I recently got like a job, like just 2 days a week with like a charity that I'm interacting with people that don't know me, that don't know I'm a comedian. Yeah. And I realized, I haven't like talked to anyone who didn't either kind of know me or wasn't in the context of comedy. Like, cause you meet people, but they're in comedy and you know them. Or you meet your friends, or you meet your friends of friends. They know you. Like they know I'm being funny.
Yes. Yeah.
So I can say something with a straight face and they know I'm being funny.
Yeah.
But I keep meeting people and making a joke who don't know it, and they don't think I'm joking.
That has been such a big part of my life, like working in offices and stuff.
I've
really put my fucking foot in it sometimes.
I realize it's been so long since I've been in like a context where I was meeting heaps of people who had no idea like that I was attached to comedy, and I was like, I'm drier than I thought.
Yeah.
Because they think I'm being serious.
Even sometimes, honestly, sometimes on stage I've run into that problem as well. Yeah. Like I've had to like really be like, I have to perform. Fuck.
We're at a show. But what I mean to say is like, I like that style, but also sometimes for a whole show or a whole hour, I'm kind of like get a bit of emotion in there. Let's have some peaks and valleys.
Catharsis is an interesting thing with comedy because like I think with stand up more than other styles of comedy, like it's a real trap. You can't. And I'm sorry, this is a segue.
Yeah,
this is a segue. You can't get more out of it than the audience.
Yeah,
like that's a trap. So I think like when you're an open mic, you're really doing it for yourself. But like if you want to go further with it, you have to serve the audience with whatever you're doing on stage.
You have to serve.
Yeah. 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 And so you lose a bit of catharsis. And like that's been something that I've sort of been wondering about, like especially since doing this podcast, is like how do I get catharsis while also being objectively an entertainer, like an entertaining act? So do you think like this play is like kind of finding part of that?
I think so. And it's so interesting that you like bring that up because it literally, and oh my God, we're getting deep.
Yeah. But, sorry.
no, like I think that is it. Like that is kind of, not to be dramatic, like the key to happiness. Not to kind of say the meaning of life, is kind of the key to happiness is being. And I think if you can actually derive satisfaction from giving and not getting,
yeah,
then that is like a more holistic and wholesome catharsis and happiness than you will ever get from kind of getting, trying to get. And you can like comedy is such a clear example of that. Like you can see when someone is on stage and they're just trying to get from the audience.
Something. Yeah.
And sometimes they're still funny. And they're still good to watch, but you can tell that they're, you know, they're sucking that energy out of the audience. Like they're loving all the laughs. They're like, haha, yes, for me.
Yeah.
Versus when someone is truly kind of giving something to people.
Yeah, sure.
And like it can still be funny. And like it sounds so wanky, especially if it's comedy.
Yeah.
But actually if you can like, you know, again, to like be, you know, Brené Brown or something, to be truly vulnerable is like the only way to serve. And I think if you can, derive satisfaction from giving something to them. And really, that's what I've really been trying to shift my mindset is being like, what can I give?
Yeah.
And that's I got a job with a charity. I got a, you know, I'm trying to do something different. Like, you know,
absolutely.
I'm clearly incredibly depressed. So I'm like, what can I do?
What can I do that isn't selfish, I guess. Yeah, yeah. Depression is such a selfish disease as well. Like,
it's so
like,
rude.
Like, I so I have depression. And it, like, you can compound it by being like, oh, I'm just so self-obsessed. Like what's, you know, like.
Well, that's so much of my show, as you know. Like, yeah, it's, she's the character and myself, because there's so much of myself. It's this person who's so self-obsessed and so self-conscious that it becomes self-obsession, that it becomes self-destruction. Yeah. And it's still
you're just compounding on the mental illness.
Yeah, and you're your own problem, like, because you're not able to give anyone anything because you're too absorbed in your own shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And then to say all that and then to still be like, and that's why I'm an artist and I'm doing a show. It's still so self-obsessed, but
a little
bit,
but like, I think the context what you gave before is like, you do want to give something to people. Like, I don't know. There's a balance. It's
all right. You want to give something.
Obviously everything you do. Yeah. There's no true altruism, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Like, and all that. Nothing's real, you know, whatever.
Nothing's real. We're in a simulation.
Just buy it. Please buy a ticket. Please give.
The point of all this, guys.
Yeah. Please give me your money so I can give you a moment.
Something.
I'll give you something. Feeling. I don't know what, but
for like Milhouse's dad, when I was like,
You can keep it.
Yeah, yeah. But I guess what I was going to say is like, I think hardcore punk, at least for me when I was playing in bands, and I think when you listen to a record like this today, we're talking about the year 2000, we're talking about the band Orchid and their second, I guess you call it an album, it was released on 10-inch record as opposed to 12-inch.
It's like a
weird one. Dance Tonight, Revolution Tomorrow. What I got, like, it was about me. Like, even though I'm performing for an audience, I'm like, I think I said this to Jamie Kirk. It was like, or maybe Jen, who was on last week. It was like, the almost like sometimes the more alienating we could be on stage, the better. Like, the harder. And I think that relates to this record as well, because it is such a, there's such a huge barrier to entry to get into this style of music, specifically like this album. And I guess, like, talking about what you were just sort of describing, it's like I'm over it. I don't want to get more out of performance than the audience is getting. But in saying that, I still think that in terms of this being a record, like in the sense like a record of a moment in time, like a record of this band's songs, now I can listen to this and I get a lot out of it, but like it's such a live format that I can only speak from my own experience. And it was like, it was all about me. It was all about my outlet, my emotion to get out there. Yeah. And obviously that's what an audience relates to eventually, but sometimes in the room it's like, I could care less who was there.
Yeah. But then also that caring less can make you a better performer. Like, you know, because it's like, but yeah, let's talk about this genre. Like, this is so interesting and crazy. And it's in the context of what we were just talking about is actually shedding a lot of more light on it than me just being like, what the hell? Like, and it's funny you said alienation, and I'm just going to lean into being a wanker, because then that makes me think more about like some of their song titles. They're kind of politically.
Yeah. There's a weird political. I think it's a relation, because like there's not a lot of information about this record online.
Yeah.
Like, it's just kind of a matter of fact. There's some retrospects of the record that came before it, their debut, which is only a year earlier, which was called Chaos Is Me. So I kind of look at Dance Tonight, Revolution Tomorrow as an extension of their first album, which was called Chaos Is Me, because that's kind of how it's described anyway in the literature.
Because it's like, I am Nietzsche.
Yeah, I'm Nietzsche. Yeah.
Snow Delay at the Frankfurt School, which is like that. And then I was like, fuck, because it's been a while since I was at uni and there's so much stuff that I vaguely know, but I don't actually know. So I was like reading the wiki page for the Frankfurt School, because it's like a group of philosophers and stuff. But directly pre Nazi Germany.
Oh, sure, right.
From like
the
Weimar Republic when they were kind of anti fascist and anti Marxist and redoing everything. But it's, I don't know.
There is like a communist overtone to it without being like truly outspoken. Like they weren't activists. They weren't like, there's a band that came before these guys called Nation of Ulysses who are kind of, okay. Before I get too far into it, when I gave you this record, you said that you showed your partner Alex, and he just laughed.
Yeah.
So he already knew this. Did he have any takes?
He knows. He's a music guy.
Yeah,
And he likes a very broad range of things, and he's definitely like had his time with like this kind of, what would you call the genre? Can I, hardcore or?
So yeah, they're a hardcore band, but if you want to get specific, because obviously like it's all nerds in this scene. If you want to get like narrow it down, so it's hardcore, emotional hardcore. These guys were one of the first bands to really define what was then called the emo violence subgenre, which is a mixture of like emotional hardcore, like the emo bands, like the Skinny Little Kids.
Yeah, I know that.
More melodic, heavy music. And then a genre called power violence, which is kind of like a hardcore punk interpretation of grind, which is more metal.
Yeah.
So then like, it's like filtering down to like even more niche.
Very niche. But it's like you would, if I say it's like heavy, it's that's heavy. The right word.
It's really heavy. Yeah. It's extreme music.
Screaming, but it's not screamo.
So it is screamo. That's okay, the thing. Okay. But like, this is like, I thought this would be a big part of the episode because
I just don't want to be like this heavy metal and people are like, oh, it's actually not technically heavy metal. You know, well,
there's a lot going on. So screamo obviously has changed in definition, and now screamo is more like that mall, like that scene kid, mall goth kind of genre. And it was like, it was very corporatized very quickly. But like when these bands came out, that's what people were calling it. Cause it was like, oh, it's like emo, but they're screaming.
Yeah.
Easy. And then there's kind of like a tongue-in-cheek. It's totally meaningless. Like it is really meaningless. But people would call it scrams, which is a real internet message board, because this all got proliferated through blogs and message boards in the late 90s, early 2000s. Like that's how it spread. So like you had these. Remember? Oh wait, I'm a bit older than you. But like, do you remember when people would be like, "Oh, that's leet," or "I'm poning you," and early internet speak?
I spent my fair share of time on the Ultimate Guitar forums.
Yeah, sure.
So, anyone out there listening?
yeah, I'm OG. Yeah. So people love like the categorization, subcategorization. Just like. Just keeps going down, like it's turtles all the way down. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think the easiest way to describe these guys is emo violence, because it was a mix of it was the guitarist. He ran a record label that released metal bands. He released grindcore bands. He released extreme music, and that's what he knew. Mm. And then these other guys came in. And it was just this like melting pot of influences.
I really respect and appreciate like the emphasis on kind of like community and like how like it's very pure the way they're like, this is our shit we're into, and it is unpleasant, and it is alienating, and we're gonna do everything we can to make it hits certain people. And I mean, I didn't get a chance to talk about it in depth with Alex because I listened to it pretty late, but I mean, the basic dialogue we had, and he's someone who enjoys and understands this kind of stuff as well, but I sent him that I was listening to it, and I said, people who make and or listen to this must be severely mentally ill. and he was like, Lameo, of course they are.
As opposed to like Britney Spears or something. Like,
It's like real, are you okay?
Yeah.
But he said basically that I think it's probably true. Like there's kind of a point in your life where you're vulnerable to what's going on in that genre. And if it misses you, then you'll never really understand the appeal. Like if you, like I can see how, but then again, like I was like I heard a bunch, not so cool and niche, but like when I was a teenager, like I never got into anything that heavy. But like, I don't know if I ever felt that bad. And
it is like it's just extreme. Like it is, and I think that was like the manifesto as well. It's like. They're young men. We have all these extreme feelings. We're going to make extreme music.
Mm.
Like that's really the long and the short of it.
And like, it's a real, really like, it's a really clear, because teenagers want to go, I'm different.
Yes. Yep.
I like this thing that you don't even understand.
Yeah.
And it's like the most extreme version of that. I mean, not the most extreme, like the most extreme is like murder or something. But you know
I guess so. Yeah.
Like,
totally.
But it's like the
in
most.
In terms of art, in terms of music.
Yeah. In terms of art, it's like, this is like physically uncomfortable to listen to. Like, you know, society will never accept it. My parents don't understand.
Yep.
And this is what I like. But, and then I guess at a point, do you start to genuinely like it? But I guess what is genuinely like? And, you know, I don't know.
Well, I am.
It's just so loud.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah, that's the frequent feedback that I get from guests. I don't know, it is getting to that point. Like, obviously, yeah, this is one of the bands that really tried to push the genre forward, and I think that was a real focus all throughout the 90s that kind of defined 90s hardcore. Like, there were bands who were like, what's next?
Yeah.
And then you get to the 2000s and it kind of does fall back in a few years, but like, I think these guys were really at the spearhead of, I mean, yeah, there's just so much tacit knowledge. I always struggle to, the more contemporary we're getting, I know this is like 24 years old, but like, I struggle to describe the bands that I actually engaged with when I was younger. Cause like, I was like, it's exactly what Alex said. Like, it is kind of that thing where it's like, you either get it or you don't.
It's a moment in time.
But these guys, I think this is one of the best sounding records in this genre. To me, it's like heavy. I can hear all the instruments.
There was some, like, I've got like notes.
did you make it all the way through? Did you make it to those slower songs at the end?
I did. And that's...
That's the part that I love. Like, it's almost like doom. Like, when you're saying it sounds like metal to you, like, obviously anyone in the culture would be like, well, it's not really, but like, it is. It just is.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it does as the album progresses, like, but then a lot of them, they might start a bit melodic and I go, oh, what have we got here? Like, one of my notes here, okay, that I've got for number 7, the track, Don't Rat Out Your Friends.
Yeah.
Wow, a guitar intro. What could this be? Be a shame if someone started yelling. And then he does, you know? Yeah, he does. Like, I always, it kind of, and even, so number 9, the second last track, Snow Delay at the Frankfurt School, like, the intro actually is like, that intro sounded really different to the rest of the album.
Yeah, super atmospheric, yeah.
Yeah, it almost sounded like kind of glam rock in a way for me. Yeah. Like, it was like, and I was like, I hope he doesn't spoil it. Oh, yeah.
And then at every turn, yeah, absolutely.
I feel like, some of them started as something, but then it just turned into like, really sounding the same as everything else.
Same all the way through. Yeah. I'm like absolutely sympathetic to that. Like, no, because I'm truly sympathetic to that because like it is, even for me, like this would have been super, even when I was already into heavy music, to make the leap from something like Korn or Limp Bizkit, which was like when I was in
high school. The thing. Like I can listen to like some Limp Bizkit. I haven't listened to heaps of them, but like some stuff gets a little bit, like I listen to a lot of Nirvana. Like,
yeah.
I don't even,
and Nirvana are an intense band.
They can get pretty, but it's like they have a whole song and then it builds to something.
Yeah.
And when
totally.
It brings you there, then you're there.
Yeah.
But this was like kind of like straight off the bat, like meet me at the level, like I'm coming in hot.
That's
which
it.
Is cool, but I'm not that
it's not for you. Yeah.
Hot. Like yeah, that's. Yeah. Or even modern, like, it's one of the tracks, like, and it's, like, real metalheads are going to be, like, cringing at me. But, like, I like Violent Soho as, like, a modern band that I feel like Violent sometimes Soho. They can yell quite a bit.
Yeah.
Am I not wrong? Like, but, like, yeah, I thought on track 3, Lights Out, I thought of Violent Soho sort of towards the end or something where you can... He's still screaming, but he was almost singing.
Right, right, right.
And
right,
I was like, oh, we're touching the mainstream.
We're touching something a little. Yeah, yeah.
Is his voice okay? Can he speak now?
Jason Green.
Yeah. How's he doing?
I'm sure he's been in other bands.
Has he got nodules or what?
My main guy from this band is the guitarist, Will Killingsworth. He's the guy who I'm like, whatever you do, I'm interested in what you're doing. Just because he's... Like, it is art. It's like... It's so intense, but so is Black Flag when they first came out, sort of thing, like 20 years
earlier. I haven't listened to Black Flag. I know the t-shirts, but...
Yeah, that's kind of their like, lasting legacy.
Familiar with the shirt.
But they're all college kids. They went to this like arts college called Hampshire College in Western Massachusetts, and that's where they all met. And they were just sort of like... Yeah, they were just sort of like attracted to each other, like Alex sort of said, like, because of the subculture.
Yeah.
And even though they all listen to different types of music, they kind of glob together in this, like progressive, forward-thinking, like, anti-college type thing. He says it was, like, it was a college for people who didn't really want to go to college but felt like they should go to college. They were interested in the idea of college.
Oh, same, yeah.
It's, like, super arty.
That's how I got 2 arts degrees, yeah.
Exactly.
I'm interested in the idea of education. I'm not really interested in obtaining any.
But that's how you get song titles like I Am Nietzsche.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah, well, that was, like...
Thus spake me.
That was all my stupid honors stuff. It was, like, I was like, oh, the Frankfurt School.
We
I
love
remember
ideas.
That shit. Oh, Horkheimer. I'm a very cool.
Yeah, totally. So that's just who they were. And like I said, he was just like into metal, into hardcore, running a label that released those sorts of bands. But he says that this is Will Killingsworth, the guitarist, who was like more or less the leader or the driving force of this band. That was his network then. So he had this network of like more, I guess you'd say like metal influenced bands, like less melodic, less in the hardcore or emo scenes. But so they started playing those sorts of shows, but with these other influences that I'm explaining this terribly, but in my head it makes sense where the combination of these two things resulted in this sound, which was so new. Yeah. At the time, the emo violent sound.
It is a sound.
Yeah, it is definitely a sound.
It's definitely a sound. Some would say noise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It is interesting. Like, it's so funny as well. Like, how much of it? Because I hadn't even tried to listen to anything like this in so long. Like, when you're a teenager, you're always like listening to stuff. And like now, I feel like I'm in a weird place with music where like I still like music, but I would not describe myself as someone who's like really into music, which I know can like alienate people. But like I've been into, like I learned guitar my whole teenage years. I was into, like, I was like, that was the dream. Like I can still play guitar and stuff, like, and I like listen to a lot of music, but like now I feel so I only want to listen to something that like has got me immediately.
Yeah,
sure. It's so easy, or that I already know.
You got things to do.
Yeah, or like I listen to a lot of audiobooks. I listen to a lot of podcasts. Like I drive all day for my job one day a week.
Yeah.
And I'm never listening to music all day. I'm always listening to an audiobook.
Yeah, I listen to podcasts.
Yeah, and podcasts and stuff. Like I'm not as engaged. And so to like listen to a new album, just that alone was like
a big step.
A big step. And then for it to be this, like you just feel your age, because I felt like a Fox News presenter being like,
sure, yeah,
this is the devil. Like,
it was like
Bowling for Columbine, you know, when they're like, Marilyn Manson caused the massacres. I'm like, if my teenager was listening to this, I'd send them away. I'd be so worried if I heard this coming out of my teenager's bedroom, and I'd think they were going to commit an act of violence.
That's the thing. It's all levels, because people are like, oh, Marilyn Manson. It's like, no. Like, I know. Have you heard this?
Like, I was like laughing, thinking about how that was a reaction to Marilyn Manson. I was like, Marilyn Manson is like pop music.
Yeah, compared
to this. This is like, call the police.
Yeah, yeah. That's what they were trying to do. And it was definitely like, it was an evolution. Like, this is the end of the decade, you know, and it was definitely an evolution of all these bands that had come before. And I guess what's interesting, because, like I said, not a lot of information on this. And I feel like you have a good, like, based on what you've said and, what sort of Alex said to you as well, it's kind of like your understanding of it, even though it's, like, still, like, that barrier between you and it, is correct.
Yeah.
Like everything you said, I was like, yeah, that's absolutely what they were trying to do. But I guess what is like significant, why I wanted to include this on the podcast, is because the influence that they had. So they weren't really sure what they were doing. It was just like, oh, you know, grindcore music, hardcore music, emo music, let's just see what comes out. But they created this just this knock-on effect for bands that came afterwards. It just created this whole scene that bands that were dedicated to this sound specifically.
So they would be like an influence for a lot of bands.
Yeah.
What would be like the more mainstream evolution of this? Could you point to a band that like I would know that they like this?
Do you know the band Thursday?
Nah.
No. They'd be the closest to mainstream that I would get. Like Jeff Rickley, who's the singer of Thursday, talks about liking Orchid and bands that kind of influence Orchid. Like there's a band called Swing Kids who are big.
Yeah.
Screamo, early screamo band.
Oh, Alex was trying to find a meme. Oh, I wish I could even remember how to describe the meme. But he said there was like a meme that was like Kanye West standing with some other one else, and they're all like, but they're like dressed like metal, and Kanye is in the Orchid t-shirt.
Oh, is he really?
I'll try to find the meme before the pod comes out.
Okay, cool. Yeah, we can put it up on the Instagram.
But he couldn't find it. So
Kanye in an Orchid shirt.
Oh, it's Robert Pattinson and Kanye West and in the meme as well, because he was trying to find the meme. He was Googling Robert Pattinson, Kanye West, Orchid.
Yeah.
But all that was coming up was that Robert Pattinson allegedly DJ'd at Pete Davidson's party and Rob Pattinson played Kanye West at that party.
Oh, okay.
So that's just some like a bit of a like a palate cleanser.
Yeah, nice.
Really mainstream gossip to kind of bring us up out of
I was worried about this episode because it's like it feels so inside baseball, and that's why I'm kind of struggling to give you the context behind everything.
Well, like, in like 10 minutes I can talk a bit about like the Kardashians or something.
Yeah, that sounds good. Okay,
if we need, I can just kind of catch us up. I'll just list Courtney's children. I'll just say their names just to bring us up.
Nice. Okay, cool.
And then we'll get back into the specific niche.
Eileena North.
North. Well, that's Kim's daughter.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
So she's got North, Saint, Shy, and Psalm.
Are they all Kanye's kids?
Yes. But they weren't together for all the kids.
Four kids. Crazy.
And that's something that the Kardashians have kind of done. Like they will have the kid, and even if they split up, if they want to have a sibling, then they'll like have the kids still with the same dad to keep the family kind of together.
Wild.
It is interesting. And I mean, Chloe's had her own drama with Tristan, but I'll put a pin in that.
Is Chloe Travis Barker's?
No. Courtney is Travis Barker's.
So sorry. I'm so sorry to do this to you.
Chloe's been pretty unlucky in love.
Has she? Is she the one who got cheated on?
Yes. Brutal. A lot.
Brutal.
But
by
Tristan Thompson, basketball player.
Yes. Yep. Cool.
And her ex-husband Lamar, had a lot of issues with alcohol and drugs, and he's
still on the show though, right?
Lamar.
Were they
no.
following his rehab journey on the show or something?
Oh,
no?
Years ago they were.
Years ago. Oh, but,
because even after they split up, she went back to be by his side when he was going through his trouble times and really supported him. So, yeah.
She's a good person.
She's a really good person. And I wish her all the best. And I really hope she finds someone.
Yeah.
But yeah. Okay.
Anyway. Yeah. No. So you saw a lot of bands all throughout that decade. Like hardcore was established. And then these bands were like, okay, so what's the next step? And it became more introspective. And that's where emo sort of came from, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to list off band names.
No,
but
no.
Unbroken are a big one that probably should have been an episode on this podcast. But
that's such a link that I hadn't really thought about, which is so the next step from this. Because so they're kind of like, and then they kind of take a second and then they like become emo. And they're like, okay. When I was a young boy. They're like, okay, like we're moving through the steps. It's the first 10 therapy sessions, you're just hitting the bat on the wall, you know, smashing up the walls, then you can stop.
Yeah.
And then you can start to unpack these things. Yeah. And that was emo.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah,
and then
now
it's just Dua Lipa and we're happy about it.
And we're happy. And we're okay.
And now we're just levitating. Yeah, yeah. It's Dua Lipa. We're fine.
Yeah. so they were obviously influenced just by like the progression of hardcore, but then like I think it's almost I would call Orchid like a line in the sand, because then there were bands that were not interested in like the traditional hardcore bands at all, just because it was like too macho, too much of a boys club, even though like this genre of music was mainly men anyways, like there's all these like weird cognitive dissonance moments in music.
We're
different guys.
Did guys in the music industry kind of start to go, I'm actually not like those other guys?
Yeah, I won't call you a bitch to your face.
Yeah, like no, that, yeah. I'm actually a feminist and
Yeah, a bit of that. I think early 2000s, that was probably more authentic because it was like...
They were the first ones.
Very underground scene, very political. And like, I think the male feminist was probably more of a genuine...
Yeah.
Claim than it is.
The first of his kind. And they were, that's what I do like appreciate about all of this is like the commitment to the actual ethos of
very left wing politics.
It's properly punk. It's actually anti-capitalist. It's actually like, you know, living the praxis that it preaches.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it was. So I wanted to talk about like all I can talk about is the Brisbane scene, because it was so, when I got into hardcore, there was a dedicated hardcore scene. It was very macho, very like muscly men playing very heavy music.
It's interesting when as well, like, because I feel like a lot of like, I have no idea about the actual music culture, but just from what I've observed in the shopping centers.
Yeah.
But like the Central Coast or something also has a pretty big like emo, like and Brisbane as well, like these places where the culture is beach.
Then, yeah, totally.
Then the people who are like, you know,
yeah,
anti-culture, like trying to subvert something, they would yeah. swing even harder. So yeah, like I imagine the Gold Coast or like Brisbane probably has really sick like yeah, anti. Yeah.
Sydney did as well when I was touring. Sydney had a great sort of like screamo scene.
Because it would be like the antithesis of what the mainstream is, which because the mainstream is like wear a bikini. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, so, but like as I came of age and me and my friends kind of started doing bands, it wasn't as genre prescribed. Like, it was just like, we just did whatever we wanted and everyone sort of just played together.
Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously, like, there were a lot of bands between Orchid and when we sort of came of age, but like, Orchid were always a big example of what screamo was. And so we'd be playing these floor shows and in the upstairs of a bar, and it would be like a bunch of different bands, but there were these guys who were just like really dedicated to the screamo. I remember there was a band called All Axe Hand,
All Axe Hand
from, I think that's from Nosferatu.
Oh, I don't know.
Something like that. It's related to Nosferatu anyway. It's about vampires. Anyway. And they were a screamo band.
Yeah.
And that was like, I remember them, there were other groups, but like I remember them as being like almost exemplary of that style of music, and that's where I kind of got in, and they were just friends, they were just like peers, and that's how I got interested in this kind of like more underground version of the underground that I was already like interested in. Like there's always something more niche to get into when it's kind of like a point of pride.
I think
as well.
Especially like yeah, it would go both ways because if in a city like Brisbane or Sydney versus like one of the bigger US cities, there's just less people.
Yeah, totally.
And so like how niche can you get until there's like three people at the show? Yeah, so it's like, okay, so how many people can listen to this to start with? That cuts out most of sane society, you know? So you're left with these guys and then you want to alienate them further by being like, no, we're actually a very specific kind of this and this and this. Yeah. But also like it's the kind of thing that would like love to be more and more specific.
Yeah. I think there was like a balance because like that's why you had such diverse lineups. Like you had different types of band because like otherwise no one would come to the show.
No one's going to be there. Like how specific can you get?
Yeah. But what I would say is like going back. So like those bands were almost, they didn't have that metal edge that this record has. Like I put on this record, I was like, oh, this is just grindcore, but with like emotional lyrics. That's all this is.
Mm.
But these bands that came later, they were almost like playing same sort of drumming, but like almost clean guitars over the top of it. Like it was like way less distorted than what you got on this record. And it kind of like,
well, that's good.
But then there's this guy. Sorry, excuse me. I'm getting excited. This guy, like, still screaming his fucking throat out over the top of it. And it's almost like the fact that it's, like, less cohesive, even though maybe it's, like, sonically easier to make sense of. But that makes it more difficult to listen to. Whereas, like, this is, like, at least everything on this record is, like, oh, the vocals are at this level of intensity and then so are the guitars and therefore the drums and bass make sense as well. Like it's, the songwriting is like, it makes sense. Whereas like to get more intense as time went on, the bands were like, well, how do we just make this totally incongruous? Like,
because it is the screaming as well. Like the screaming is like a really interesting part of it because like you can have guitars this heavy, but if someone is singing, it can almost exist because you can still like hear words and things like that. But screaming is also something that like elicits something like visceral.
Yeah,
in people.
It's animal.
It's like so crazy.
Yeah,
because guitars are like one thing, but to actually be screaming, it's like, oh no, he's upset.
Yeah,
like because I don't even know what I was trying to say, but. When did people start like screaming for the whole song? Because like I said,
I know what you mean. Yeah,
this plenty of mainstream
it would be
rock,
Black Flag, I reckon.
And do you know much about? So and then I've heard that people say like, oh, but the people who scream, they're like they train their voices to be able to do that's actually highly skilled.
Oh,
I feel like absolutely not all of them are.
No, not this band. Definitely not this band.
If they act, do you reckon they've got long lasting damage or do they sound crazy to talk? Do you watch interviews with singers who are like, yeah, man, we just released that. Like, even Jimmy Barnes doesn't sound okay.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Are they okay now, or do they ever stop screaming?
I'm pretty sure Jason Green is still doing bands. I'm going to do a quick Google. Oh my god, fucking one-handed typing.
I've heard Hayley Williams even talking about headbanging recently. I saw like her on an interview or something, which
yeah.
I never even listened to. I never even got into like normal mainstream emo. Like I wasn't even a Paramore person or something.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But
yeah.
She's talked about when they were touring and they were young, they'd always be headbanging, and all the old bands were like, "You're gonna regret headbanging.
Oh, you're gonna regret neck problems.
And now she's got all these neck problems from headbanging.
He was in another band called Panthers, and that's it.
Panthers, that sounds cool.
Yeah, pretty cool name. Yeah.
I wonder as well, like, what these guys like. Do you reckon? Because he wouldn't have made enough money from this, like.
No. Well, Will Killingsworth is still doing bands. Like he is absolutely one of my favorite guitarists. One of his later bands.
And he's got a label and stuff. And
yeah, like, yeah. And he records bands as well. He's an engineer. He had a band called Bucket Full of Teeth.
That's cool.
And I love that band so much. But it is like, again, it's the next level on from this. I wouldn't even say there's any emo in Bucket Full of Teeth. It's just sort of like pure grind. They call it avant grind.
Yeah.
Just like weird experimentation, like weird recording methods and stuff like that.
What if he works in a shop or something? And like, because how could you do this? Like, how could you go on stage and do that? Like, like 2 nights a week or something do gigs and then just like go to an office or something? Or
maybe that's what I did. It was like,
what's the only way you can go to an office? If you go on stage and do that.
I needed something to look forward to. Like all my jobs, like the position description was just like process forms. I'm like, what is
process forms?
There's something about banality that is almost worse than like actual physical pain sometimes. Yeah. Like over a long enough timeline. Like Yeah. This is like lack of purpose, I think.
Did you ever do... So when you were playing in bands, were you singing or were you...
No, I was guitar. I was bass. Yeah, mostly. Yeah.
And like, were you ever just like tired one night? Because what if you're just tired?
It's more like the practice.
What if you have a bit of a headache and you've got to scream? Like, how do they...
Shows were usually fine.
All my questions are just like about, is this guy okay?
The actual physical logistics.
And you know everything about like the history and the this and that. And I'm like, yeah, but like, what if you got a headache?
Yeah.
Like,
honestly, it was practice. Practice was the hardest thing some nights. Yeah. Because, you know, you got to book out a practice room for 4 hours.
It's too long.
And then some nights I'd just be like lifting up my amp and I'm just like, fucking, I just don't want to be here. Yeah. Shows were fine. Shows were fun because it's like going to comedy. Like all your friends are there. It's a pleasure to hang out.
Yeah. And you've got the energy of the crowd. Just like comedy. It's fun to hang out with other comedians. Kind of. But that's also like comedy privilege that I talked about with Alex because my boyfriend, he's played in bands and stuff as well. Yeah. And I was complaining about something. I was like, if I host, I have to be there the whole night.
Yeah.
And I have to watch and this. I just want to do a spot. And he was
make sure no one bombs.
Because it was like a gig with bands as well. Oh. And I was like, I don't want to have to watch the whole fucking thing. And then he was like, that's so funny. Like comedy, you're so lucky. He was like, if I had a gig with a band, you had to get there at 4 p.m.
Yeah, you load
for
in.
Sound check.
Yeah.
You've got gear. You've got drums. You've got a fucking bass. You've got amps. You've got to set up, load in, sound check, hang around for 2 more hours.
Yeah.
And then you do have to stay and watch all the bands because like probably your gear is around and then also just like the culture of it, you have to support the other band or something.
Yeah.
You've got to split your fee between 5 of you.
Yeah.
And like comedy, you just kind of walk in with an empty tote bag at like...
Especially if you're hosting, you can just be like, you don't even have to do material.
Yeah, you don't have to do anything. You just rock up empty-handed 10 minutes before the show starts.
Empty-handed and empty-headed, it's fine.
And literally like hang out for 2 minutes and then like duck out. Like it's so easy. But it'd be a nightmare. Imagine if you had to carry around a drum kit.
Yeah. Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah. You should become the first drumming comedian.
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't even. I've just realized Fred Armisen did that whole Netflix special about drumming.
That's funny. Whoops. I didn't even remember that.
I feel like I've done a close to terrible job of explaining what this band was and what they meant. I don't know. Can you, if I have, what gaps have I kind of left in the story?
I don't know. It's just kind of washed over me. I don't think, but like you probably have done a good job. I just can't, you know, I don't know. They were like the first of like kind of starting to bring like more emotion to metal, but then they were also really hard.
They were one of the first, like, I think what it was like combining those metal, those extreme metal influences with like the emotional hardcore that came before them. So bands, and I know this is, again, this is inside baseball, but for people listening, like there's bands, I would include Unbroken, but also there's a band called Portraits of Past who came earlier, a band called Swing Kids who came earlier, who are like, those are the blueprints for screamo or like true screamo, like the non-corporate corporatized screamo. And then these guys, Will Killingsworth, the guitarist specifically, because he was just a big fan of grindcore and extreme metal, it was just by virtue of the fact that these specific four guys came together, he created something new just by wearing their influences on their sleeves.
But it's so crazy that, and like, and again, because people listening to this are fans of this, and I get it, I appreciate it, I know it's different, but to the untrained ear, like it's completely new, and I'm like, sounds like it all to me.
Yeah, fair. Yeah. Does it feel like it's 24 years old to you though? Does it feel like it's over two decades old when you listen to it?
I would say no, but then also like, isn't it crazy how everything now, it's like, did you know that isn't fucking Gangnam Style 15 years old? Yeah, you know, true. Like, what the hell is time? What's happening?
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it's just a slow march to the grave.
It really is. So, you know, it doesn't sound old, but also maybe it.
Yeah.
What is old?
Yeah. Actually, you know, I've got a couple of interesting facts. Maybe not for you, Lauren, but like maybe just to close it down.
Yeah.
Just to give a little bit more context. So in terms of the lyrics, Jason Green, who we're worried about his throat. We're worried about polyps.
Oh yeah, lyrics, because I couldn't hear any of them. So
well, there's one song, I forget which one it is, but like literally the lyrics are just for it's a minute long, but like he's just going, you are, you are, you are, you are, you are, which feels very like,
wow, I am, I am, I am. Isn't that whose poem is that again? A woman, a famous one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's like rooted in poetry, rooted in like philosophy, obviously, but it is also kind of meaningless. So he says about when they started, at least, and like I said, I kind of see this record as an extension of their debut, but he says, I was copying a lot of bands I liked because I didn't know what to do exactly, and then he said, I don't think that had a huge effect. I'm not even sure what that means. This is from an interview. But then I realized that what I took from bands I did like was from within their own micro genres, and he's talking about being subversive within something that's already sort of subverting something. Like that's what I mean. Like it's just getting more and more niche all the way down. They were doing things that maybe fell outside of the lines of what you'd expect from a hardcore band or a grindcore band. And I think that sort of influenced what Orchid then did. Like they were, it's not even like they're just subverting expectations at every turn. So it's like,
yeah. Do you think the genre has like now continued to become more subversive?
No, I don't think so.
But because I feel like you can kind of... Yeah.
Yeah.
And like at least music now feels more commercial than ever.
Yeah.
Or even it's weird how music, like even when it's not commercial, like the TikTok is doing such a strange thing to art and to music.
Yeah.
Like the lyrics of music, like even when it is an independent act on TikTok who are building their own thing. And so like all in theory, you think like, oh, it's these like creators who are independent and they're building their own audience by reaching people on TikTok. But it's something that is so strange. Like all the lyrics are like, I met a girl at the pub and she was mean to me. It's the kind of things that like can be captioned that are weirdly relatable.
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh yeah, those,
it's like, you always call when you want something from me. We just go out to tea. I don't know. It's like
all those character pieces that people...
It's commercial, even though it's independent. Like,
yeah, yeah. But like, you know, the two camera things where it's like, oh, the girl you knew from school who, it's not just like that one girl from school. It's like the girl you know from school who was toxic, but also had like a Pomeranian dog and also drank Slurpees every day.
Yeah.
Like it's just, I'm like, who?
Yeah.
You're talking about a specific individual at this point. Yeah,
but like, in the specific is the universal. And so that is something that I believe in. But also like, but it's something off, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's like that with music now, and you can hear when something is made to be viral for 10 seconds, like, because it has a sound bite that is like tickling people, and it's,
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. So yeah.
I think even in subculture, I think a lot of bands, like the majority of bands, are really just expressing. It's an homage, or at worst, a pastiche of bands like Orchid who came before. They're just like trying to do what has already been done, rather than necessarily doing something that is truly. I mean, I think the only way to do something truly new is to wear your influences on your sleeve. Like it's the Quentin Tarantino thing where it's like a direct reference to this, but like putting it all together and daring to do that is how you get to the next step. But I don't think bands are really doing that now. I think they're almost just copying. Yeah.
Yeah. Because like how much more extreme can it get? Like when you like...
Yeah.
It's loud. It's at its peak loudness. It's at its peak screaming.
Yeah.
And then you try to think of, okay, well, what would be even crazier? And then it just becomes like everything they did in like 80s black metal, like pig's blood on the stage or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Ozzy Osbourne biting the head off a bat. It was like, because that would be crazy if you saw that at a show.
It would be, yeah. It would be
but it would also be like cringe. It'd be like...
yeah, people would just roll their eyes.
It'd be like, oh, okay.
That is such a... I mean, I don't know how it relates to this specifically, but like that insight is so like people do just roll their eyes at unimaginable violence these days. That's where we've gotten to.
I know. But also...
Like, oh, God. Hack. Like, yeah.
Yeah, but maybe because like what you said as well about how it being so live, it's such a live genre. Like
it is, yeah.
To be there, like I get that as well. Yeah. Like even something like wrestling.
Yeah.
To bring that up. But like it's something that is so only.
Wrestling has a lot of parallels, I think, to punk rock music. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's like as a live experience is.
There's lore.
Yeah.
There's lore.
And it's so. It's so fun when you're in the thick of it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But if you're alone, like watching wrestling, some people do. No hate.
No hate.
But it's completely different. Like.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Like I could go live. as someone who's never gone to a wrestling show before in my life. I could go with Andrew Hastings and Dave Woodhead, and I would have the best night of my life.
Yeah, and I did.
But I'm not gonna come here and watch it by myself.
I'm not going to put it on. I'm not going to get it. But I went, if you go to wrestling, then you're like, whoa, I'm in the moment. So maybe.
You think it's going to be a new personality?
I'm like, this is, I get it. It's so cool. This is so funny. Like, but
it is interesting to me, like coming into this, like you do, the way you explained your reaction to it, like is absolutely correct. Like you do get it.
Yeah.
You don't have to like it to get it.
I don't like it. I get it. Like, I'd have to be, if I was in the most specific mood of my life and I also like felt for the first time in my life completely like I didn't have a headache. I was energetic. I was ready.
This is what Jen said as well.
Yeah, I was amped up and I was just fucking full of it and I went to a show. Yeah. I could be like, ah! But like... Or I don't know if I took like hard drugs, it would be awesome. Sure.
Yeah.
But same with Dan. And I'll say I get this more than I get like dance music and dubstep and stuff. Like that's another level of like what the fuck? I can't do that. And sorry to my boyfriend. Check out his drum and bass release called Possible People.
Possible People.
Got to shout that out.
Yeah, you got to do it.
And that's more melodic than a lot of things for me, but because I've heard a lot of drum and bass stuff and I'm like, fucking, I don't get it. I don't get it.
Yeah.
But this is at least just clearly them being like, ah!
Yeah, yeah. And the only other thing I kind of left out was like, they were all suburban kids. They were from suburban Massachusetts. Mm. And so it was all, I think, on, like I said, online message boards, blogs, but also like zines were big still at that point in time.
Yeah.
And so the record label they actually signed to called Ebullition? Ebullition Records. They had a zine that was like huge in the hardcore scene. And Ebullition released a bunch of different types of bands, but they did become known for this sort of genre, like the screamo genre, like long term. But they were actually going to release a band called Inside Out, which was Zach De La Roche's first band.
Oh, that's a name that I've...
Rage Against the Machine.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So he was in a hardcore band. Ebullition were actually going to release their record. They didn't. They went with a bigger hardcore label. But they're a very traditional sort of hardcore band. But before Rage Against the Machine started, Inside Out, that was going to be the title of their second release.
Mm-hmm.
And I only just found this out, but Kent McLeod, who is the owner of Ebullition Records, came up with that phrase.
With
Rage Against the Machine.
Wow.
So they have a direct lineage to the screamo, the underground screamo genre of California in the late 90s, which is so bizarre to me.
I get how like a band like Rage Against the Machine could be like a... Because what's his name again, the other Rage Against the Machine guy?
Tom Morello.
Tom Morello, he's like quite an outspoken activist guy. Yeah,
it's all politics.
Oh, is it? They're very political. Yeah, and like I can get... Yeah. That feels like an evolution that feels natural to me to begin by being like, wow, like they're literally raging. And then he goes like, what if actually let's make this be a bit more palatable, a bit more sensible, a bit more...
Let's sell something. Let's make some money.
Let's make some money and let's reach some people and connect with some people in a more articulatable way than just purely like tickling that like rage.
Pure rage,
And that's cool.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I think even the sound of Orchid is super political because like, talking about like subverting everything at every turn, but then like the fact that they were just suburban kids, they just met at college. Like in interviews they're talking about Dead Kennedys, they're talking about NWA, and they're talking about Metallica.
Yeah.
Which are all like pretty like if not mainstream, like Metallica are mainstream now, but like pretty more popular bands than just like random hardcore band XYZ.
Yeah.
And I think what they describe is like the scariness of when they were kids and they first heard Dead Kennedys, NWA or Metallica compared to what they'd already been listening to. And that was the same for me when I was listening to Korn or Limp Bizkit, and then all of a sudden I heard the band Refused. And then because I heard Refused, who were just like a more palatable version of all this underground stuff, that's how I got into bands like this.
It is like
it's just a gateway
drug. It's a gateway thing, yeah.
And it's like, it is the sort of, when you're a teenager, you're like, oh, this feels naughty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what makes a band like Orchid, I guess.
You do need to kind of go down the road of it.
Yeah.
And that was even like, I never got all the way to anything properly heavy, but that was like, I listened to like a lot of Nirvana. And then I think like the heaviest thing like I ever really... Which is not heavy at all. But like I like a few like Billy Talent songs or something.
yeah, right.
And he screams. And I remember thinking like, oh, that's pretty heavy. But then I was like, then I found Lana Del Rey and came right back around. Oh,
I love Lana Del Rey.
And I love Lana Del Rey. I love Father John Misty. Talk about emo. And like, Jesus. You know, all of that. Yeah, exactly. And that's female rage, you know.
Dude, her, like, oh my God. If I was in college right now, I would absolutely be writing some sort of political paper about Lana Del Rey. What she's doing as a
manifesto.
Artist.
She's doing so,
she's so fucking good. Do you like Red Scare?
No, I started listening.
I don't listen to them anymore.
I was like, I could listen to that. And then I started. Then I was like, you know what? I don't need to get into that.
They're a couple of weirdos, but I used to listen to them a lot. I think they fell off a bit. I think they got a little bit deranged.
They got a bit crazy.
After the Alex Jones stuff.
It is pretty fun. I get it. Respect. They're funny.
They're so funny. Their takes on Lana Del Rey, though. I love their takes on Lana Del Rey.
I'll have to look into it.
Thanks so much for coming on, dude. I hope this wasn't completely fucking...
No.
I appreciate your takes on this. I really think you had some really interesting stuff on this. I felt like I struggled to explain. And I knew I would. This would be a challenging episode. So it was very unstructured kind of storytelling. I understand that.
No, I get it. Like, it was interesting. And it was interesting to, like, think about this stuff. Because I said, like, I don't sit down and listen to a new album very often at all. Even when, say, Lana Del Rey releases a new album, I'm still kind of like, oh, I've got to listen to a whole new album. I don't even know.
It's a job.
It's a job. But it's really interesting to think about as well in the context of like everything we were talking about before we started, like about stand up and like when you're gearing up to do a show.
Yeah.
And you're kind of thinking like, why am I doing this? When you're like doing something that is like pursuing something creative. And like, I get it.
There's something universal in the specific, right?
Yeah. But I am worried about you guys. And I hope you're okay.
We'll be fine.
I think you should like seek some help or...
This was help. This was...
Yeah.
No, it was a really bad form of therapy. It's a total trap to think that was it. Like, it's a total trap to think that stand-up's going to be therapy.
Yeah. And I guess a lot of people do, but... It's still.
It did
very...
stop me from sucking on my exhaust pipe. That's what I say. It like
I mean, that's good.
A week of processing forms. I need to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, it's crazy though, and I still would be concerned about a teenager if I heard this coming from their room.
Yeah.
But maybe
balance in all things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
cool. I think you brought a lot. You did a lot of heavy lifting on this episode. I really fucking appreciate it. Yeah.
No,
yeah,
thank really you for having me.
Go see Imagine Having Anything at All. Follow Lauren Bonner on Instagram. That's where all the info will be up.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. At Lauren Y Bonner on Instagram and Twitter and whatever.
What was Alex's project again? Possible People?
Oh, yeah. I mean, shout out. You can listen to Possible People.
Yeah, listen
drum and
to
bass. Or actually, he also has a dungeon synth.
That sounds cool.
Project called Lore Spinner.
Is that like, that sounds awesome. Is that like Tangerine Dream type stuff? Like
Dungeon Synth? I don't know what that is. He probably would. But Dungeon Synth, I mean, it's exactly what it sounds like.
I'm gonna listen to that.
It's like fantasy, computer game. Inspired synthesizer music, that atmospheric kind of ambient.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Lore cool. Spinner. I listen to it actually when I'm like walking on the treadmill and reading a book.
That sounds cool.
Yeah.
I'm on Instagram, ryan.d.sim. I got shows coming up at Sydney Comedy Festival, 13 Jokes, May 8th and 10th.
Exciting.
Dead Ramones on Instagram. Send us a DM. Tell me everything, all the facts I got wrong about Orchid today. Yeah. We're all nerds. I know that there's going to be some details that...
Yeah, I hope I didn't upset anyone
You definitely wouldn't have.
But also to you, if you're listening, seek help. You know,
seek help.
I hope you're okay.
Mental illness is a real concern these days.
Yeah, I hope you're not too upset about me maybe calling something metal when it's technically grindcore.
No, I am on a campaign to be like, these guys, Orchid were, like from what I read, from his influence, they were a fucking metal band.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just didn't have the aesthetic of a metal band.
What did they wear? Like a flannelette
tight,
shirt?
Tight shirts. Tight.
Tight
small,
shirts.
Small shirts. Youth medium shirts.
Small shirts.
Yeah, small shirts, tight jeans. Yeah.
That's funny. These guys, they get together, they're like, all right, we're doing small shirts.
We're doing small... Guys?
There's two kind of bands in the world. Small shirts and big shirts.
No one's like wearing a shirt. It's the small light and the big light.
Like. Yeah. No one's wearing a shirt in a medium.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Nothing in between. And also, yeah, Rat Club. If you're in Sydney, Rat Club on Mondays, come down where... Talk about catharsis. We're trying to do something with Rat Club. We're trying to figure it out.
It's so funny. Yeah. Weird. You say all this and then someone's like, wow, maybe I will go to comedy. Then come along. And then it's like, you know, then you just have like a really random open mic set.
Yeah.
And they're like,
well, hey, I sang Bon Jovi 2 weeks ago.
That's raw.
For an audience member.
That's raw.
That's raw, dude. No, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm practicing gratitude.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I hope we gave you something
today.
Yeah,
same. Yeah. Thanks, Lauren.